हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 24. Now the second part of verse 36 is explained. Hari Bhakti in this verse refers to the stage of Rati or Bhava Bhakti, the goal of sadhana bhakti, just as Bhakti refers to Bhava Bhakti in the following statement. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya by Bhava Bhakti produced from sadhana bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.31. Moreover, the word sadhana in this verse should mean only sadhana in relation to the Lord, not other processes, right? Because all these religious processes that are there, they all have sadhana, right? Because sadhana means practice. So they have their ritual, the different things that you have to do. So here, to gain bhava, it can only be sadhana within devotional service, not these other ones. Does that make sense? Because if these other ones are performed, not connected to Krishna, they'll only give the result in their particular area of their religiosity. Does that make sense? Yoga will give within that thing, jnana will give within that, study of scriptures will give within that, austerities will give within that. It won't give bhakti. That's the whole point. Bhakti is independent. Bhakti only generates bhakti. So anything you use, if it's connected to bhakti, then it'll give an effect. Right, but its effect is it's being used in bhakti, not what it generates.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like the cooking process generates bhakti in that you offered it to Krishna. It's not because it produced, you know, some potatoes that therefore that's bhakti. Right? Cooking the potatoes to please Krishna, then Krishna accepting that, then becomes prasad, then it's connected within that. But the point is it's two things going on at once. Right? You're engaging the religious process is generating its specific result. But if you use it in bhakti, it will then bhakti will, it'll be used as a medium for expressing affection for Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense? But the point is, the sadhana in these other areas without bhakti will never give bhakti. Not because they're pious, they're wonderful, they're good. Oh, you need this for devotion. No, bhakti produces everything itself. It's self-sufficient. Right? You know, it's exactly what everyone's looking for. The self-sufficient, self-sustaining, all these. Yeah, bhakti is that.
When we speak about bhakti, we always allude or think about the intent behind.
Yes, yes.
And it's mean bhakti means intent is always to please Krishna from beginning till end. From beginning to
yes,
end.
Yes, from beginning to end. It's all about Krishna. Yeah.
And the other sadhana may add some bhakti at some point.
No, the other sadhana can be used as a medium to serve Krishna because you express the primary through the secondary. Right? Means how you say it. What's the example they use? I don't remember, but it means you have the inherent nature of something, that's Krishna.
Yes.
But then that inherent nature is expressed through something.
Yes.
You know, just like childness is an inherent nature.
Yes.
Then the natural form of childhood is small, like infants and toddlers
yes.
and like that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That manifests it. So the point is the primary exists on its own whether it's manifest or not. Mm-hmm. It exists. It's the internal principle. It's Krishna. And then, through his energies, then the secondary, you see it manifest. So the point is that the secondary is always used for expressing or manifesting the primary. But it's not that the primary is dependent upon that. That's the thing, is we think, oh, without this, then it won't happen. No, it already exists. So the point is we can appreciate it when it's manifest, but it's not about the secondary manifesting. I mean, the secondary being used, it's about that devotion to Krishna. You see, it's just a switch in the mentality, like you were saying, beginning to end, it's bhakti. And so that focus of that it's about pleasing Krishna, and then you want to do something to express that desire to please Krishna. So that's the whole point, is the secondary activities are there in support of the primary. The primary is Radha and Krishna and their interaction. Everything else expands to support that. Right? So the direct expansions, then those are still counted within that icha aspect. But what goes beyond to make the arrangements, make the facilities, all the different things, that an action can produce something. Like, you know, that I can put my hand under here and put pressure upwards and it opens the table. That'll be Kriya. That the table exists and there's space in beside it, yeah, that's the jnana. So those are there to support the icha. So this idea of secondary, it's there, it's inherent. Because Krishna's energies are non-different, so they're inherent. But the point is the secondary is only for the purpose of enhancing and bringing out the interaction of the primary. Does that make sense? So all religious processes, however you're counting them, then they're only there to assist bhakti. They don't have any other purpose. Right? We've made it some other purpose. Just like somebody has money, there's no other purpose than for them to use it for their own needs. Right? But we have another idea. We'll take their money and use it for ourselves. But that's not what it's for. Right? So Krishna's energy is for assisting in his pastimes with his devotees. But we take that same energy and then we want to use it for ourselves. So we can't have that energy. We'll get the reflection of that energy, the shadow of that energy. And then we can try to, you know, be the big people with that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Good. For sadhana without relation to the Lord will not give rise to bhava bhakti at all. So it's only sadhana bhakti will give that. Whether you're following rag or whether you're following vaidhi, it will get you to bhava. And bhava means rag. Right? It's just a matter of that. So one doesn't have to worry that rag won't be there. Because the point is what's elevating you anyway is, as we said, a portion of... You bring that with you from Calcutta, or?
My construction site.
Oh, means the doll guys. In the hut in the front. Okay.
They never bring it back.
Do they come and collect it?
Yeah.
Oh, they come and get it.
After the class, every day they come, take it, and then we bring it back. Then tomorrow they'll like take it.
I was wondering, where's he bringing it from? Like that.
It's
from the it's from that upstairs Brahmachari ashram in Calcutta, and he brings it every week with him and all that. And so Brahmachari is really happy when he comes back and brings it with him for the weekend. So then they go. They're still working or they're finished?
No, they're finished.
Oh, okay. Okay. When we finish, then they take it. Okay. Does that make sense? So the point is the point of sadhana, bhakti, is it brings you to bhava bhakti. And by practicing bhava bhakti, that brings you to prema. Then, if that sadhana means direct service to the Lord, performed with great attention, attained by progressing through previous stages, there should be no fear at all concerning attainment of bhava bhakti. Right? Because the point is, the focus is on the five direct activities. Mm-hmm. All the other aspects and all that are supportive of that, either directly or indirectly. So, though the verse states that it cannot be attained even after much practice, and that it is rarely attained, sudurlabha, it is stated in many places that bhakti is easily attained. Right? The point is this: the attitude, the proper attitude, is what then pleases Krishna and you attain bhakti. The work itself, or in acting through these secondary aspects and all these kinds like that, that is that on its own, it's thousands and thousands of, you know, maybe Krishna will say, okay, let's see how steady it is. But if that mood is there, then it's very quick. So that's the whole thing. It's very easy, but it's also very rare. Because the main thing is all you have to do is surrender. That's all you have to do. Who wants to surrender? That's the point. But it's actually in that way easy. So if we're not surrendering, then it'll take a long time, right? Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.4. O Vyasadeva, in that association and by the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. Thus listening attentively, my taste for hearing about the personality of Godhead increased at every step. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.26. So a contradiction arises if that meaning of sadhana is accepted. However, there is another meaning of sadhana as illustrated in the following verse. Na sadyati mam yogo na shankyam dharma udhava na svadhyayas tapas tyago yata bhaktir mamorjita. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. Those engaged in mystic yoga, Shankya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation cannot thus control me. Right? So that's the meaning of these other sadhanas. Right? Yoga, Shankya, pious work, Vedic study, austerity. Because religious, you practice religious activities. Right? So we practice only in connection with Krishna, so it's devotion. Others practice because it's pious, there's something that they want. They want liberation, they want material facility. The word sadhayati in the above verse does not mean bhakti, but various processes such as karma with their respective goals. Thus, quote, by practicing various sadhanas other than bhakti, bhava bhakti is difficult to attain. Right, because unless in there, there's something that's there, some sincerity, Krishna will put you in contact with the pure devotees, then only it'll move forward. Okay, this should be the meaning of the second line of the verse 36. The previous verse, 35, stated that, without attachment, anasangahi, bhava bhakti was hard to attain even by countless sadhanas. It should be understood that bhava cannot be attained without attachment, and also without skillful execution. Right, so here the attachment means asakti. So when you attain to asakti, only from asakti you can get bhava. Does that make sense? So that means there's that mood that you are trying to perform the activity very nicely. Now here is a very important word being used here, skillful execution. So since the buzzword of the day is you know, knowledge and skills and all that, therefore then one can be very excited about these learning the skillful execution of pure devotional service, and then in that way attaining to that attachment that will bring you to bhava. And then it becomes worthy of having seminars and other things like that. Otherwise it's just devotional service and, you know, we'll fit it in.
So we need professionals. We need professionals to teach us skillfully.
Yes, we have to have, yes. So there's this skillful, yes. So in other words, it's not just anything goes. You have to know what you're doing, because if we take a modern concept, the skill means you have to have knowledge, you have to have practice, you have to have training. So that means bhakti is the same.
Yes.
If one takes shelter of many processes, not just bhakti, one cannot achieve bhava. Right? One may advance, but one won't attain bhava, because bhava means this one-pointed. There's attachment. If there's so many things, then you can't have that attachment to Krishna. You'll have Krishna along with so many other things. So, thus, a sangha should be understood to mean, quote, with attachment and only using that the process of bhakti, end quote. If so performed, then bhava can be attained. Attachment cannot exist where there is attraction for swarga, and skillfulness cannot exist in that condition, since the person will also fall in many types of sadhana. Right? So they won't become very expert at it. Right? So here the skillfulness means, you know, it's very well done, one-pointed. Thus, practicing various sadhans along with bhakti is not desirable. This is made clear in statements such as the following. Tasmad ekena manasa bhagavan satvatam patihi shrotavya kirti tavyascha jaya pujascha nityada. Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.14. So this one-pointedness is important, because that's what brings you in bhava to the point where you become qualified to actually associate with the Lord, is when that one-pointedness there is exclusive. So there's always this element of exclusiveness. When that exclusiveness is there, that's when things progress very nicely. So, yes. Therefore, this bhakti should not even be mixed with other sadhanas. It has been correctly described with the words jnana karmadhyana vritam. Vriti. Now the author describes a second type of rarity of pure bhakti. Even if practiced with attachment, Krishna does not give bhakti to the practitioner immediately. Right? Because he said it's difficult to obtain. But if one is doing that with devotion and focused just on Krishna, then it's easy to obtain. But if you add any of these other sadhanas and all of that, that will be very, very slow. Does that make sense? So, in other words, mystic yoga, okay, mixing that of course is pretty obvious, right? Shankya philosophy, that we know the philosophy, but it's not about Shankya. It's about understanding how the material world works so you can situate yourself spiritually so that you can pull your attention out of the material world. Right? Just like, they say, for example, in Shankya, then we understand that in the creation of the, that means in the creation, that the mind is coming from goodness. Right? So therefore, if we want to control the mind, it has to be situated in goodness. To be situated in goodness, then you have to be doing those things that are recommended by Shastra. Right? But the only reason we're doing that is so that we can be absorbed in Krishna, or pure goodness. Right? That has a meaning. But if we think that, no, I have to situate myself in goodness, I have to do that, or we just get into analyzing the universe and all that, and that it won't bring us to bhava. Because if you're absorbed in the Brahman and Paramatma aspects, it won't bring about bhava. It's about being absorbed. You're attached to Krishna, not Paramatma or Brahman. But it's about the person, the subjective person. Does that make sense? Or pious work, you know, we have to be good, we have to be nice, you know, we have to, like that. It's going to be a distraction, as was said before. Vedic study, you're just studying to know, the jigyasu. It won't go like that. Austerity or renunciation, if that is a prominence. No, it's you perform devotional service, naturally austerity and renunciation come along with it. And that which comes in naturally, you just perform that. You don't separately try to be austere. Does that make sense? You just follow what are the duties. Right? Does that make sense? So within the bhakti, all these other religious processes are already included. So if from bhakti you are engaged in bhakti, then including these others, whenever they come up, they're used. But they're not a sadhana as such. Because when it needs to be used, it's used. When it's not, it's not. But a sadhana, it's used on a daily basis, used on a regular basis. Does that make sense? So then the focus is on these other religious activities. And Prahlad Maharaj says, unless they're connected to bhakti, they're a waste of time. Right? So we see is that the hints of these things have been there all the way through. Right from the beginning. Because so many times he's quoting from the first canto. You know, first chapter, you know, like that, the first few chapters. Okay. 1.1.37. The second type of rarity is described in the Bhagavatam. My dear King, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. Those that engaged in getting the Lord's favor within liberation from the Lord, those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily. But he does not give Bhava Bhakti at all times. Right? To be situated spiritually, that will come. But Bhava, that's another thing. Right? In other words, material facility, liberation, these things then one can get easily. So Bhava is the special thing. Because then by Bhava he's controlled. Right? Like we see the Pandavas. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.18. Srila Prabhupada. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, verse 18, Narada also says to Yudhishthira, my dear king, it is Lord Krishna, known as Mukunda, who is the eternal protector of the Pandavas and the Yadus. He is also your spiritual master and instructor in every respect. He is the only worshipable god for you. He is very dear and affectionate, and he is the director of all your activities, both individual and familial. And what's more, he sometimes carries out your orders as if he were your messenger. My dear king, how fortunate you are, because for others, all these favors given to you by the Supreme Lord would not even be dreamt of. End quote. The purport to this verse is that the Lord easily offers liberation, but he rarely agrees to offer a soul devotional service. Because by devotional service, the Lord himself becomes purchased by the devotee. So that's why it's rare. Because with devotional, pure devotional, you get Krishna. Right? So other things you can get. That's not the problem. Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami. The statement, Karhi Sit, Karhi Chit Na Bhakti Yogam Dadati, actually should mean that the Lord gives bhakti sometimes. He does not give bhakti at all times. This is understood from the meaning of the word chit in Karhi Chit. Ashak Kalye Tu Chit Chana. Chit and Chana mean not completely. Amar Kosh 3.4.8.97. Okay, we thought, you know, 200 or something in the Chaitanya Charitamrita was a lot in one chapter. So Amar Kosh has it beat. The verse does not say Karhi Chit Api Na Bhakti Yogam Dadati. He does not give bhakti yoga at all. Therefore, the actual meaning here is, even though one executes sadhana bhakti with attachment, asanga, until the time that one produces intense asakti in that bhava, the Lord does not give bhava bhakti. So the aspect of intensity is there. So that's focus. In other words, you can, by sadhana you'll progress, but to get from asakti to prema, sakti to bhava, that's only by the Lord's mercy. Right? Because the other aspect, you take up sadhana in that, it's by Krishna's grace that then you come in contact with the pure devotees. By coming in their contact, then you take up the process. Right? Taking up the process, then if you stick to it and you have that faith, you'll advance. Right? It's an automatic process. But the point is then to go into bhava bhakti, that's just by Krishna's mercy alone. So that then, for it says, produces intense asakti. So when you're very focused, if you're just plodding along, you plod along, you get up to that point, but it'll only when you become really focused, one-pointed, then at that point. Because otherwise, why would Krishna give himself to someone who will only take be absorbed sometimes? If you're always absorbed, then it is, he feels, then he can have a proper reciprocation. Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with him personally. Before that, you connect anything to him, you know, in the proper, you know, as recommend, and you will advance. But then this means that he's not giving himself, because he's dealing on as Brahman and Paramatma. He himself is involved, of course. But the point is he's not, he doesn't have to give himself personally. He's interactive, he's there. But he's giving himself personally. So that's then the specialness here. Does that make sense? So we have to remember, we're talking about Braj. So it's pure unalloyed devotion. So with pure devotion, you can move into bhava, and then from there you develop pure unalloyed devotion. But that we are developing it because that's, we know that that's what is there, that's what we want to develop. Right? What you see is just with pure devotion, you can enter Vaikuntha. So you don't see all this rigmarole. The person's there and something happens, and then with four arms they go back to Vaikuntha. Right? Haribol. Right? But here you're talking about then preparing, because then personally Krishna, in his own desire, then he is then acting and he's giving himself to the devotee. So we're talking about something very great, something very special. You know, that's why it says it's rare, because how many people want that?
Right? What is the statement that with pure devotional service you will go to Vaikuntha and with pure unalloyed you will go to Braj? What's the difference in that? The words pure and unalloyed.
Pure means is that the other aspects of liberation are part of the are part of their system. But in Braja Bhakti, there's just no liberation. They don't care about liberation. So, yeah. You know, because it's nice to be with God or be associated with God or be, you know, have the facilities and therefore use those in God's service and all that kind of thing. But in Braj, it's just about God. It's not so much about these secondary aspects. You know, so pure devotion means it's all connected to the Lord. So there's no fault there. But it's just that in Braj, it has a different flavor because it's just about him as a person. And that's all they care about. They don't require the majesty and all that. So, this is characterized by the phrase anyavilashita shunyam, that bhakti should be completely devoid of other desires. Footnote 26. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita it is stated, by the mercy of pure devotional service, the personality of Godhead, the supreme controller, becomes subordinate to his devotees. And this, in effect, deprives him of independence. So pure devotional service he rarely bestows. In my opinion, the Lord's coming under the control of his dearmost servants creates no unhappiness or fault of any kind. Rather, it creates great joy and broadcasts such glorious qualities of the Lord as his affectionate concern for his devotees. The way the chief of expert heroes voluntarily submits to his devotees is supremely dear and attractive because it contradicts his self-satisfaction and certain other of his natural qualities. It is the ultimate perfection of Godhead, Godhood. When persons addicted to mundane vision see the bewildering symptoms of ecstasy born from pure love of God, they ridicule the devotees. Because such mundane persons have no desire to achieve devotional service, the Supreme Lord withholds from them his prema bhakti. Devotional service endowed with prema is very rarely achieved. In contrast, the enjoyments of heaven are easy to obtain, and so too is freedom from material existence. People rarely, if ever, find a Chintamani gem. They usually find only glass, or sometimes gold. Only once in a while does the Supreme Lord give bhakti, and only to a rare intelligent person who desires only that. indifferent to the opinions of the world. We are not able to describe completely this special ecstatic state, nor is it proper for us to do so. Right? It means it's difficult to explain, and it's improper to do so, because if it's not appreciated, then why explain it? Right? And to explain it, then one requires the adhikar, so therefore, then the acharyas bring it as close as possible. Right? And even if the most perfect of scriptures, those dedicated to promoting devotional service, were to describe in detail, the effect on ignorant people would be contrary. So seeing that, then they would see it not in a favorable light. So that's why it says, don't train the glories of the holy name to thee, those who are inimical. You know, it may come up in the conversation, but as soon as you see the mood's not right, you don't go any further with that. You go back to talking about the weather or something. You know, like that. Yes? No? So interesting is that as we're coming through the various literatures, then, you know, by tendency, we tend to see more the secondary aspects. You know, because, of course, if primary is there, yeah, of course. And so there's so many different secondary and so many words and vocabularies and definitions and everything like that, that it seems like such a great volume. But then, you see, as you keep going, then it comes, you see, is that all that's ever been talking about is this. That it's just about Krishna. So it's always been there. But then as you go, you start to see. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then you see it's actually very simple. When the other day you were talking about it. So that's the point. That simplicity, that's what you can then explain. You may not get into so much detail or so much about the subjective aspects of Krishna, but the basic fundamentals that you see that the acharyas always talk about, then that's always brought out. Because if you get into too much detail, then unless someone's qualified, then the mood will not be supported. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. O King, Krishna is the protector, Patihi, of you Pandavas, Bhavatam, and the Yadus. He is your instructor, Guru. He is to be worshipped, Daivam. He causes joy, Priyaha. He is the leader of the clan, Kulapatihi. Though appearing in the Yadu dynasty, Krishna gives equal treatment to you Pandavas. Moreover, sometimes he becomes the servant, acting as a messenger for you Pandavas. He does not even do this for the Yadavas. Though he has love for them, he has greater love for you. What can be said of his giving such exalted prema to you who do not even worship him? This is the greatest event. He hardly ever gives bhava bhakti, bhakti yogam, to others, even though they worship him. However, let him give despicable liberation to those who worship him for that purpose. Nevertheless, he certainly gives bhakti to the pure devotees who do not desire liberation. This is not mentioned directly, but implied by the words karhi chit api, not at all times. So it's very, very subtly done. Because right? The point is to encourage, but at the same time show the rareness of it. Right? The idea of here showing the rareness and all that, then one becomes more focused. That's the idea. One sees that this is what is supposed to be done, so one isn't so interested in all the other dharmas. That's sarva dharmam paritya jamam ekam sharanam braja. It's just about Krishna. The other religions aren't the other religious aspects, those aren't the important thing. It's about trying to please God. That's the important aspect. Trying to please Krishna. Right? So then the other things, as they're useful in serving Krishna, that's where they're applied. And whether or not, they're not. So, Vriti. Yeah. Next, the author discusses the fifth characteristic of pure devotional service. Sandrananda visheshatma. Those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. One, so what's Sandra is? That's liberation.
Sandra means condensed bliss.
Okay. So, if you don't have the bliss, then you just have the condensed. Then. Bhakti is composed of a special condensed bliss. The bliss of Brahman realization. The bliss of Brahman realization accumulated by samadhi lasting for half of Brahma's life cannot compare to one drop of the ocean of happiness of bhakti. So, if you have Brahman realization and you're absorbed in samadhi and that goes for half of the lifetime of Brahma, that still will not compare to one drop from the ocean of happiness of bhakti. Right? And they're so happy if they just have a moment where they connect with this Brahmananda. Right? But so you stretch it out for 151 trillion years, still it won't compare even to a drop. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it still cannot compare to atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service, right? Because a trillion, because there's 151 trillion years, is half of the lifetime of Brahma. Mm-hmm. Right? Srila Jiva Goswami. In this verse, Parardha Guni Krita means the bliss of Brahman accumulated by samadhi lasting for 50 years of Brahma's life. Yeah, because the Parardha means is there's two Paradhas in Brahma's life. Right? So half of that is 150 trillion years. So that's the point. Multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it still doesn't matter. Jiva Goswami said. 1139. Hari Bhakti Shuddhodaya says, O Guru of the universe, on seeing you directly, I am situated in a pure ocean of bliss. All the happiness of impersonal Brahman is as insignificant as the water in the hoof print of a cow. Right? All the you won't take it seriously for anything. Right? Because when it says even you can use water like that that's considered pure, it has to be a puddle that's big enough, that's how much a cow drinks to slake their thirst. So that's a few buckets of water. Mm-hmm. So if you pour a few buckets of water on the ground, that's a big puddle. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of puddle you walk around, you can't jump over it, you know, it's that kind of puddle. So that's big enough where if you have, there's no other water, you can use that to purify yourself with. Yes. Right? So, the amount of water in a calf's hoof print, you know, that's really small. Yeah, so that does, it's not, it's, what's that going to do for you? 1140. Also, it is said in Bhavartha Deepika 10:88-1:11. Bhavartha Deepika, is that someone's commentary? Sridhar Swami, that's his commentary. Okay, because it looks like Bhagavatam is. Okay. Some fortunate people play in the sweet ocean of your topics and enjoy the greatest bliss. They consider the happiness from artha, dharma, kama, and moksha to be as insignificant as grass. Right? Because grass, we just take it, it just grows everywhere. You do nothing, it grows. Right? You know, it's yeah. Srila Prabhupada. In the Hari Bhakti Shuddhodaya, Prahlad Maharaj, while satisfying Lord Nrisimhadev by his prayers, says, My dear Lord of the universe, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth compared to this ocean of bliss. End quote. Similarly, it is confirmed in the Bhavartha Deepika, Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, My dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narrations of your pastimes. Certainly no ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from such religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Such a transcendental devotee regards any type of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street. Right, so this is what he means. Like Prabhupada used straw in the street, that's the meaning of grass. They don't mean this nice, you know, manicured lawn or something like that. What we're meaning is just the straw in the street. Yeah. Nobody cares. It's just stepped on in that. You know, in fact, sometimes you see, let's say, like in Calcutta, in Butter Bazaar, there's a fruit market. It's right in the place where Prabhupada's house used to be. It's right there at that point. So, before, that would have been big open streets and everything like that. If you look at it, the place where Prabhupada appeared, where he lived, was probably the most aristocratic spot in Calcutta. Not now, but if you look at it, it had these huge arched gates and this. So it wasn't just a street, it went off inside and this and that. You had this big open area, things could be done and like this. But now it's just turned into a fruit market. I wouldn't recommend going in there. So, you know, unless you have nothing on you worth taking, then go ahead. So, in that market, then all the fruits there, the fruit comes, in fact, in these, you know, funny wooden crates, you know, the practically useless wood kind of stuff like that. So, and in that, they pack this stuff in straw. And when they open the boxes, they just take the straw and toss it out into the, literally, on the road. They don't keep it. It's not like, oh, this is good straw, keep it. And then if the road becomes wet or anything like that, then they take more of that and throw it down so everyone just walks on it. Does that make sense? So that's the meaning of no better than straw in the street. That's straw in the street. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Vriti. Next, the author describes the six characteristics of pure devotional the sixth characteristic of pure devotional service. Sri Krishna Karshani. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. 1.1.41. Bhakti attracts Krishna and his associates. Bhakti is called Sri Krishna Karshani because it makes the Lord addicted to prema and brings him under control along with his associates. Right? So the point of this is sakti is you're attached to. So the point is he becomes addicted to that prema of the devotees. So that attachment is there, that rag. So if you don't have rag, how can you reciprocate? How can you interact? Because Krishna just interacts with you. You don't have rag, how is he going to reciprocate? Therefore, he doesn't give rag. Does that make sense? That's it. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that devotional service attracts even Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone, but devotional service attracts Krishna. The symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Radharani. Krishna is called Madan Mohana, which means that he is so attractive that he can defeat the attraction of thousands of Cupids. Right? Cupids try to attract, but his attraction is greater. You know, Cupid gets his little power from Krishna. But Radharani is still more attractive, for she can attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call her Madan Mohana Mohini, the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani. And devotees in Vrindavan put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. In Bhagavad Gita 9.13, it is confirmed that the Mahatmas, or great souls, are under the protection of Daivi Prakriti, the internal energy, Radharani. So, being directly under the control of the internal potency of Krishna, devotional service attracts even Krishna himself. I mentioned before, in the previous verse, that Radharani, she's serving. Everybody else is enhancing that. So it's about the pastimes of Krishna and Radharani. All other expansions than that are all in support of that. So the material world is to bring us to that point of being in that, taking part in that supportive role. Yeah. 1.1.42. Thus Bhagavatam says in the 11th canto, "My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service in the form of prema bhakti rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. Those engaged in mystic yoga, Shankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation cannot thus control me to this extent." Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.20. There's not enough space in there to get the numbers in there. Cannot thus control me too.
The word, as soon as you press the space. Enter, then it readjusts back. Then you have to go back, readjust, and do it again. Now I read on my lap. Word is like,
yeah, it's a problem. Srila Prabhupada, this fact is corroborated by Krishna in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 14th chapter, verse 20, where he says, "My dear Uddhava, you may know it from me that the attraction I feel for devotional service rendered by my devotees is not to be attained even by the performance of mystic yoga, philosophical speculation, ritualistic sacrifices, the study of Vedanta, the practice of severe austerities, or the giving of everything in charity. These are, of course, very nice activities, but they are not as attractive to me as the transcendental loving service rendered by my devotees." So the point is, they're nice activities, but it's the rendering of the devotional service that attracts Krishna. So why are they nice activities? Because these are activities that are engaged in the service of bhakti. They're not bhakti themselves. They're just engaged in bhakti. You know, just like the pots and pans in the kitchen aren't cooking. Cooking is a separate entity. They're able to be engaged in the service of cooking. But if you have pots and pans and don't use them for cooking, they're a waste of time. So, yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami, though one may conclude that the bhakti mentioned here is sadhana by comparing it with other processes such as Shankhya, it cannot be an example of sadhana that brings Krishna under control. Because of the statement in verse 41 that Krishna is brought under control only by sadhya bhakti. Thus, the meaning is bhakti after producing sadhya bhakti. Prema controls me. Right? So sadhya means then is the goal. So the goal, in other words, the ultimate goal of bhakti is prema. So when it says sadhya bhakti, that means prema. So prema controls him. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, that's why it means bhava will mature into prema. So he's very careful in giving bhava to those who, as they move forward, they will move forward and take an interest in prema. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Na sadayati means those processes are not means of attaining me. Urjita means very strong and intense, because of not being covered by jnana or karma. Right? If there's karma and jnana, we get distracted, so it's not so focused. So we say that intensity is because it's just that. So that's what we mean by that attraction, that intense. Right? Because it means nothing else is important. Right? One's not worried about what people are saying and what different things. So the whole social status, all these things, these aren't important. It's pleasing Krishna, that's important. 1.1.43. Similarly, Narada says in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam. Page 25, 1.1.37. Then after the second type of rarity is described in Bhagavatam, then it needs a colon. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that's what is being done in most of the other places. My dear Maharaj Yudhishthira, all of you, the Pandavas, are extremely fortunate, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, lives in your palace just like a human being. Great saintly persons know this very well, And therefore, they constantly visit this house. Right? Because this is the house that Krishna comes to. Right? So, Krishna is the most worshipable person. But Krishna comes to this house. So they want to associate with those who are so attractive that Krishna comes to their place. Srila Prabhupada. How Krishna becomes attracted by the devotional service of his devotees is described by Narada in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 10th chapter, verses 48 and 49. There Narada addresses King Yudhishthira while the king is appreciating the glories of the character of Prahlad Maharaj. A devotee always appreciates the activities of other devotees. Yudhishthira Maharaj was appreciating the qualities of Prahlad, and that is one symptom of a pure devotee. Pure devotee never thinks himself great. He always thinks that other devotees are greater than himself. The king was thinking, quote, Prahlad Maharaj is actually a devotee of the Lord, while I am nothing, end quote. And while thinking this, he was addressed by Narada as follows. Quote, my dear King Yudhishthira, you, the Pandava brothers, are the only fortunate people in this world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has appeared on this planet and is presenting himself to you as an ordinary human being. He is always with you in all circumstances. He is living with you and covering himself from the eyes of others. Others cannot understand that he is the Supreme Lord, but he is still living with you as your cousin, as your friend, and even as your messenger. Therefore, you must know that nobody in this world is more fortunate than you. Because otherwise he was thinking just, he as a devotee is thinking, Prahlad Maharaj is special, we're nothing. And then Narada Muni says, no, the Lord comes and stays in your house. Right? In Bhagavad Gita 11:41-42, when Krishna appeared in his universal form, Arjuna prayed, quote, my dear Krishna, I thought of you as my cousin brother, and so I have shown disrespect to you in so many ways, calling you Krishna or friend. But you are so great that I could not understand. End quote. So that was the position of the Pandavas. Although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest among all greats, he remained with those royal brothers, being attracted by their devotion, by their friendship, and by their love. That is the proof of how great this process of devotional service is. It can attract even the Supreme Personality of Godhead. God is great, but devotional service is greater than God because it attracts him. People who are not in devotional service can never understand what great value there is in rendering service to the Lord. They're thinking, you know, it's about getting stuff, getting facility positions and all that. They just see it from the mundane. So what's the point of, why do you have to please the Lord? You know, as a person. Maybe you have to deal with him as God, yes, but as a person. Srila Jiva Goswami. Not being fully satisfied with the previous example, the author now gives another example, illustrating how bhakti attracts the associates of the Lord, as well as the Lord attracts the associates of the Lord as well as the Lord, which was stated in the definition in verse 41. Right? So he gave one example, but being not satisfied, he's giving another, because it's so glorious, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. Quote, Prahlad was so fortunate that he saw the Lord. We are, however, unfortunate. End quote. To pacify lamenting Yudhishthira, Narada speaks these words to him. Quote, you are more fortunate than Prahlad, than me, his guru, than other devotees, than the gurus of the Yadus, than sages such as Vashishta, Marichi, and Kasyapa, and then Brahma and Shiva. You are most fortunate among the worlds of Jivas. Sages who purify the world by their presence come to your house to make themselves completely successful. Abhi Yanti. Because the secret Supreme Brahman, who actually has an eternal human form, resides in your house without even being called by you. Right? He just decides to go, owing to his attraction for you. Right? It's not that he goes only on the formal and all that. Even he just decides he wants to go see. The Brahman in human form does not reside in the houses of Prahlad and others, and the sages do not come to their houses to make themselves successful by seeing him there. Right? Because Now, even if they see the Lord, they're going to see the Lord, and what is the Lord, according to what Krishna does, his reciprocation. What form of Krishna will they see, that sage?
According to their devotion.
According to their devotion. Right? But now if they go to the house of Yudhishthira Maharaj and see Krishna there, then what Krishna are they seeing?
Krishna.
Means according to the devotion of the Pandavas. And Krishna lives in their house. He doesn't live in anybody else's house. Does that make sense? So they come there to make their life successful. Yes.
So the question would be, if, say, their object of worship is Paramatma, can they relate to Krishna how he is personal with the Pandavas?
Means they will. It's just that they, the aspect of majesty and all that, then that generally keeps them on that platform. But when they see these others, then they may be drawn forward and appreciate. Because you can see it's just like Bhishma Dev and so many others. They're glorifying the gopis in Vrindavan. Even the queens at Mathura, I mean, it means the women at Mathura, the queens, all these, they're all glorifying them because they can appreciate. That's the point of devotees. They can appreciate others' service. So that's always there. So it just is more taste there. So then they go to hear that, to see that, to experience that. So, yeah, so it's not a problem. And then what that's the point, is that it's so attractive, it attracts the devotees. That the devotee is so attractive, he attracts the Lord, and that devotion of those devotees attracts the devotees as well. So that's what he's saying here. The associates of the Lord as well as the Lord. Like that. So, 1144. Three types of bhakti will be explained later, one after the other. The greatness of bhakti is uniquely glorified by the six qualities just mentioned. Two qualities appear in each type of bhakti. Right? So you have three kinds of bhakti, and there's these six qualities. And two qualities that of these six appear in each of the three forms. Right? So then 3 times 2 is 6. Srila Jiva Goswami. Vishaha means the pairs of the six qualities of bhakti, starting with Kleshagni, successively glorify one of the three types of bhakti. The prefix pari in pari kri titam means uniquely. The first two qualities belonging to sadhana bhakti. The first four qualities belonging to bhava bhakti. All six belonging to prema bhakti. Right? So it's not that, because otherwise you think 2, 2, 2, then something that we have that the other. No. The first two are there in sadhana bhakti. You know, then bhava bhakti then has four, but then has those two and four more. I mean, and two more for four. But prema has those four and two more as six. That makes sense. So each one includes the last. First two qualities belong to sadhana bhakti. The first four qualities belong to bhava bhakti. All six qualities belong to prema bhakti. In containing successively more qualities, they are like the four elements, such as air being included in the fifth element, earth. Right? Because each one, as you go, it has the qualities like that. It's the same kind of principle. 27. Ether has the quality of sound. Air has the quality of touch and sound. Fire has the quality of sound, touch, and form. Water has the quality of sound, touch, form, and taste. Earth has the quality of sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. Similarly, sadhana bhakti has kleshagni and shubhada. Bhava bhakti has kleshagni, shubhada, moksha, lagutakrit, and sudurlabha. Prema has all the six qualities. Like that. Is that? So let's see.
He says that this is like from sadhana to bhava bhakti, there is two extra qualities. But the first two qualities are, we can say,
they remain.
Remain.
Yeah, means you take up sadhana, then as you develop that, as that develops to these two qualities, become very prominent, become very successful.
Yes.
Then as you move into bhava, then two more qualities are added to those two, and they continue until they reach their perfection, and then in prema, then two more qualities are there.
Yes.
Is that? Yeah. Furthermore, 1145. Furthermore, it should be stated, even if one has a little taste for the topic of bhakti, he can understand it. He who tries to understand bhakti by dry logic cannot understand it, because logic is insubstantial. Right? Because logic is mechanical. So it's insubstantial for understanding personal reasons. Right? So Krishna is a person, devotees are people. That relation that they have cannot be understood by dry logic. It's machine. Like that. It's not substantial when it comes to relationship. It may be very good for doing mechanical work. You know, it's just like your hammer is very good for driving nails into the wall. But can the hammer understand your mood? No. So that's the whole point.
Right. Huh. This could be taken as an argument in favor of sahajis, for example. Because they don't bother with logic understanding the rasa. They just try to experience that.
But it says if one has a little taste for the topic, he can understand it. Of course, they'll say they have the taste. But then we always see the acharyas always talk about that they don't have the taste, and when will they get the taste? But it doesn't mean that they don't have knowledge and that they cannot use logic. What it's meaning is the dry logic itself you cannot understand. But if you have a taste for the topic, then it's being nicely presented, and then you'll understand.
Because we learn so much about rasa from the point of view of shastra.
Yes.
Which doesn't give us necessarily the taste.
Yeah, but they don't have the taste either.
No, just leave them. We're talking about us.
Oh, I see. Okay, we've left the sahajis. So. Like straw on the street, just tossed aside.
Yeah, so it also doesn't give the taste as such. Just the understanding of...
No, the taste is there. It's an it says one can understand it. Says a little taste, one can understand it. So the point is, if it's understanding, that means there's some taste. But we're talking about the ocean of bhakti.
Yes. What I meant, maybe I didn't express it correctly. For example, we talk about Vibhava, Sanchari, and all those ones.
Right.
We understand what it is, like here standing on it. Okay, we experience that sometimes, not with Krishna though.
Okay.
But
it's hair standing on end when you think, uh-oh, it's going to get technical again.
So, so we study that, but we study the rasa from the...
Yes, we don't have that taste, but we're hearing about the ocean of bhakti, but unless you have a little taste, yes, then you wouldn't be interested in it nor understand it. So that you're understanding it means there is some taste. So it's just a matter of you continue, that taste grows and grows until it turns into attachment, and then that focus, when that attachment is focused exclusively on Krishna, that turns into bhava.
And can we also add to that that by studying those symptoms and everything, we can also detect them in ourselves, which are real and which are fake?
Yes, that is a application of them. It's not the primary application. You know, it's just to keep it from being... It's just like, always remember Krishna as the primary, never forget as the secondary. So that the knowledge on these higher aspects can be used to see that one's not... See that one is engaged in properly the service and nicely situated, but also to avoid being distracted by things that are not very important. Yeah. So it does both. That's the point. Devotional service already includes the secondary. Right? If you have the primary, you have the secondary. Right? If I have the lunch, that means the secondary, that it was cooked in pots on the fire and cut up with knives and washed and this, all that. That is already included.
Maharaj, if we go on to stay in the course, we need to have some taste.
Yes.
But
yeah, but you notice that, how you say, taste is appreciated from 4 to 5:30.
Because
yeah. Then you see who has some taste.
Every year it is the same thing.
Huh?
Every year it is the same thing.
Yeah. But, so this, yes, that's the whole point is that it's It's this Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. This is there. So Prabhupada has created courses so that we go through and develop that habit of studying. But let's say once you get through the 12 years, it's not that now you stop, and then you know after 30 years, then when you bump into some younger devotee, yes, I studied for 12 years and all that, and you know, like that. So it's just that it develops a habit that you always want to be absorbed in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories in the association with devotees.
So it means we cannot stop.
No. Yes. So we keep on that aspect. Yes. Brahma studied 3 times.
And he's the most intelligent.
Yes, he's the most intelligent.
So we're not that bad.
Yes. So if we get through once, we're good. We're good. Srila Jiva Goswami. Something else should be said concerning those who have no taste for bhakti. That is expressed by the words kim cha. Ruchi or taste in this verse means taste for scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam that present the true nature of bhakti. This taste arises through previous impressions. That ruchi lets one understand the nature of bhakti. The highest position of bhakti, bhakti tattva vabodhika, an equivalent expression would be shraddha payati. Ruchi produces faith in the supreme position of bhakti. Logic, yukti, which is dry, kevala, without ruchi, cannot give an understanding of bhakti. However, logic along with full taste for the topic of bhakti can give an understanding of it, right? So then that leaves the, how you say, the sahajiyas out in the cold, right? However, logic, okay. The same meaning of yukti should be applied in the latter statement, shastre yuktau cha nipuna. The Uttama Adhikar is endowed with skill in scriptural knowledge and logic, with taste. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1:2:17. Right. So, yeah. So that's the whole point, is that logic is used, because the point is this: it's Krishna, he's tattva, so it's not illogical. So if you study the scriptures, it's logical. So it's not that the intellect is dissatisfied. But the point is one can, the soul can only be satisfied in taste for Krishna, if it's devotion. So that mood of devotion, and then you apply yourself, you use your intelligence to study the scriptures, because that's what Krishna says in the Gita. One who studies this studies, worships him with intelligence. Right? So then that goes together. So you see is that the Uttamadhikar is endowed with skill in scriptural knowledge and logic. That's why no one can defeat them. But it's not that they have to study logic to do that. They will be able to present anyway and defeat.
So it means we will never do bhakti and dharma shastra.
Meaning? Means after going through the prema chakshus, you won't want to go near the thing? No. Because the whole point is how it connects to Krishna and all that. That's why it's so small, essential. But the problem is, to actually get a proper Chaitanya-upanayanam course, it can be done properly by those who've gone through this course. Yes. Because you have to be able to go into it and pull out just this. Mm-hmm. No. That's another one, huh?
We don't have those yet?
We're working on it.
Work in progress.
Yes, work in progress.
Prabhupada was undefeated in any argument. Never heard any tape whatsoever where somebody defeated Prabhupada.
No.
In Venezuela, conversation, some so-called intellectual people were arguing back and forth. You know, India is best. You know, West is best. India West came. Prabhupada silenced them by saying that, yeah, in your Western world, nobody has peace of mind. In India, they are very peaceful people mentally. And mind also matters. So how can you say this is a materially advanced civilization, a materially backward civilization? Argument over the left.
Yeah. So you generally see in like in the BTG, they would put the, I think Prabhupada speaks out. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Do they still call it that? Yeah. So you have some discussion. Prabhupada says a statement. The other person brings up an argument. Prabhupada makes a counter to that. They bring up another argument. Prabhupada counters that, and then he talks until the end of the article. It always, that's the way it always goes. And so I remember, you know, we'd be fired up, yeah, you know. So it'd go back and forth, and a few hours later, this still hasn't concluded. So then, you know, it's time to get on the bus and go back to the temple. So then, not quite on the same standard, right? You know, yeah. Because we're thinking it's technique. It's not. It's you know, Prabhupada knows Krishna. It's a realization. So then you're able to see what the person is talking, cut through to that, what exactly that they're trying to establish. Because they're trying to say it's superior, and they're pointing out other things, but he's saying no, but it's about peace of mind. That's the thing that the West can't get. It never even tries to say it will give you that. Right? Even in the advertisements, only in India do they use the term peace of mind when they're talking about, you know, what do you call it? About, you know, fixed deposits in the bank and all that gives you peace of mind, you know, in the future that, you know, how you say, you know, the facilities for the wedding for your daughter or your son's, you know, college education or like that. Only the West, they'll never use that. It's just not something that they even, you know, so as soon as you bring that up, finish.
Nobody considers that.
Yeah, it's not even considered. When you bring it up, it's like, oh. Yeah.
They only say peaceful in question.
Peaceful?
Yeah, it's the, when they speak about the housing for the upper end people.
Peaceful.
Peaceful environment.
Yeah, peaceful means you don't have to worry that somebody that's not from the community will be walking around there and cause any trouble.
No neighbors see on one side.
Yes, no neighbors. There's gates, there's security guards. So. Nobody knocking on your door. 1146. Concerning this topic, it is said by the ancient authorities, a person more skillful at logic can bring about a conclusion different from what was carefully proven previously by another skillful logician. Srila Jiva Goswami. This verse shows the insubstantial nature of logic. The quote-unquote ancients mentioned above refers to commentators who agree with the statement tarko pratishtanat. Logic, being insubstantial, can prove the opposite. Vedanta Sutra 2.1.12. Abhi yukta taraihi means by those who are more skillful at logic. So the point is, whoever is more intelligent in the logic has more power, then he can defeat. Like that. So that's the point. When you're dealing just in the externals, then they can just keep defeating each other, whoever's better. So that's the whole point, is one who knows Krishna, he knows you can't defeat him. Right? Yeah.